I'm David Fetter, Executive Editor Technical for Prepared Foods Media, and this is Reasoned Opinion, an editorial series on trends in the food, beverage, nutrition, and ingredient industries. Just so you know, the opinions presented in the series are subjective and solely my own, not necessarily those of any staff, administration, owners, visitors, or anybody related to BNP Media. March is National Nutrition Month, and the ideal role of those of us in the nutrition communications field is to promote good, healthy eating. Are we doing that? I'm afraid I have to display some cynicism here. Those of you who don't know me, my main soapbox has always been countering shoddy and misleading nutrition information. When I became a registered dietitian and nutritionist nearly 30 years ago, while doing the coursework and research toward a PhD in nutrition biochemistry, we were trained to use ethics and good science as the twin supports in communicating nutrition concepts to the public. While I usually focus on things like the demonization of salt or attacks on sugar or meat, this time there's something different that has my goat by the chin hairs: the recent news about the sugar alcohol and popular sweetener erythritol. In case you missed it, though I don't know how you could have, there's a viral story that's been exploding across media everywhere about a study at the Cleveland Clinic on erythritol. Headlines such as "Artificial sweetener erythritol linked to heart attacks and strokes" and "Popular sweetener linked to heart attacks" dominate. And then there are like 1,000 second tier media and social media outlets that just go right for the lizard node with words like "kill" and "death" included in their headlines. Disturbingly, nearly all of these shock and awe deliveries are being made by or given credence from health and nutrition professionals, dietitians, researchers, even MDs and the like. In fairness to the original paper, kind of, its title carries the more neutral headline, "The Artificial Sweetener Erythritol and Cardiovascular Event Risk." The neutrality unravels pretty much immediately. So let's take a deeper dive. Starting at the very beginning, one glaring mislead needs to be spotlighted immediately. Although manufactured, erythritol is not an artificial sweetener. It happens to be present in nature in fruits, vegetables, and is a product in some fermented foods. But wait, there's more. Erythritol also is present naturally, secondary to metabolic processes, in our blood, serum, plasma, and even in our urine, among other bodily fluids. I want you to stick a pin in that fact because it's important later. Now, while the study getting all the attention included data from several other studies, the subjects in the main human studies were already health compromised. They consisted of seniors and near seniors ranging in age from 55 to 81. Two-thirds had pre-existing conditions that included cardiovascular disease and hypertension. Half of them even had previous heart attacks, and nearly a fifth complete heart failure. More than a fifth had diabetes, and one in six were smokers. Now, to their credit, the authors did acknowledge that because patients in their observational study show a high prevalence of CD and traditional risk factors, the translatability of the findings to the general population needs to be determined. Wait a minute, what? Another interesting point regarding the subjects: they all had great cholesterol levels, but that also is suspicious, seeing as how they're already heart patients. Such good cholesterol levels makes me think at least many of the subjects were likely already on statin drugs or similar. And by the way, statin drugs have been suspected of causing cardiovascular incidents in their own right. I read the study half a dozen times. I couldn't see where medications were mentioned. They should have been if they weren't. The authors did point out similar confounding variables, stating that they recognize, and I quote, "the possibility of unmodeled confounding, for example, diet, that may have directly or indirectly impacted results by factors that are not included in our models." Now, in what you might call left-handed praise for this study, one cardiologist stated that it, again, I'm quoting, "does an exceptional job in bringing observational, in vitro, animal, and dietary intervention studies together," which, by the way, I disagree with. I don't think it did a good job of that at all. That's subjective. There's nothing wrong with including data from other studies. It's what the best dissertations are made of. But I think we have to take it as read that this also means cherry picking such data will probably be the rule. Now, then this cardiologist reviewer rightly warns that, once more, quoting, the findings are based on observational studies, which could be confounded by other factors, such as if erythritol consumption is associated with a poor diet, which is itself a risk factor for cardiovascular disease and could be contributing to the higher risk in those with high blood erythritol. In fact, there are other studies that demonstrate just that. In combining in vitro and in vivo data without accounting for those variables, you can end up with a very huge difference between clinical significance and statistical significance. I like the perspective provided by Ryan Lowry, PhD, CEO of the Applied Science and Performance Institute. Sharing a study titled Aggregation and Activation of Blood Platelets in Exercise and Training, Dr. Lowry wrote, study links exercise to heart disease? Where are the headlines shouting this from the rooftop, canceling gym memberships and forcing people not to move from the couch? Sounds silly, right? Yet the recent erythritol study discovered a trend which suggests increasing platelet aggregation with increasing levels of erythritol. However, the preponderance of evidence available demonstrates that platelet aggregation and function are increased with exercise, even in the presence of aspirin. Does that mean we should stop exercising for fear of increased risk of CVD? That would be a terrible idea. Dr. Lowry, I could not agree more. Terrible idea. Dr. Lowry goes on to point out that this is, quote, an example of why generalizing from a cell culture model to chronic changes over time should always be done with extreme caution, and that for these reasons, toxicity trials, human safety trials on a substance must remain the gold standard. Statistical significance is a result that is measurable and proven not due to coincidence, and typically involves a correlation. We'll talk about correlations in a little bit. Clinical significance is something that is strong enough to make an actual impact. That's what sent millions of people down the wrong road about sodium and hypertension for 3/4 of a century. Now, what about the blood studies on erythritol levels in the Cleveland Clinic research? Aha, remember the fact that I asked you at the beginning to hold on to? Seems we humans already have levels of erythritol in our blood. Now, while such blood measurements as done in the study do include a baseline, it still needs to be determined how that interacts with ingested erythritol and how this also affects measurements of the same. The authors do mention the natural occurrence of erythritol, but they shrug it off, citing the 1,000-fold difference in erythritol in foods versus in nature. But then in the following paragraph, they point out how poorly metabolized ingested erythritol is and how the majority of it is fairly rapidly excreted in the urine. This contradiction gets brushed aside almost immediately. So now we get to the biggest flag. The study's authors readily acknowledge that, quote, another limitation of our clinical observation studies is that by design, these studies can only show association and not causation. Ching! So here's the take home. As with all research, correlation is not the same as causation. Here's my favorite chart from one of my favorite sites demonstrating just that. So to repeat, there's a difference between statistical significance and clinical significance. Speaking broadly, statistical significance means a result is measurable and not able to be attributed to coincidence. And clinical significance essentially implies an established cause and effect, usually a deleterious one. Favorite comparison I like to make is, if your boss comes in and tells you he's giving you a significant raise, you go home, pop that bottle of Cristal, put a down payment on a new car, only to get your next paycheck and find out the raise was $20 a month. Well, it's measurable and can't be attributed to coincidence. Therefore, you just got a significant raise. I don't fully blame the study's authors, not fully. I think they could have been more open about the flaws riddling their study. Remember, it's only one study. There are many other studies on processed sweeteners, some good and some bad. By that, I mean both the studies and the sweeteners. But the media have proven again that they are in the business of man bites dog stories with very little concern about the hysteria and confusion they wreak. And especially now with viral social media able to spread these things globally in microseconds. But this isn't really news. What is news is that all too often, the hysteria is being inflamed by the very professionals we need to be able to trust for some honest, ethical, science-based research. Looks as if we nutrition communicators still have our jobs cut out for us. Well, this has been Reasoned Opinion. I'm David Fetter, Executive Editor Technical for Prepared Foods Media, and I invite you to pile on the comments and pro or con. I look forward to hearing from you. And I also look forward to having you join us next time. Thank you, and till then.